This is Ann Cox, and welcome to Moving Mindfully. Here we delve into the psychology behind physical activity, and we talk about the many different paths to getting the most satisfaction and enjoyment out of moving our bodies. I also try to connect the research or the science behind physical activity to the actual practice itself. Let's begin today's episode.
Hi, everyone. Today I'm talking with Nancy Burtonshaw, who has been just an incredible mentor and teacher to me since I began my own yoga journey about 3.5 years ago on a regular basis. So let me give a little bit of background on Nancy before we start chatting. Nancy is a transplant from Seattle. She has been on the Palouse since 2008. She is a parent and a step-parent of two teens and two young adults. She has a number of certifications and trainings in yoga, including ERYT 200 and RYT 500 yoga certifications. She has Anusara inspired teacher status, and she has also studied prenatal yoga and has certification in restorative yoga as well. She has been passionately engaged in yoga since 2000. She's been a teacher since 2007. And her background includes roots in Baptiste Power Vinyasa and Anusara Yoga. And I probably haven't listed everything, but that's a lot of her yoga background. I first met Nancy at Nourish, which is a yoga studio in Moscow, Idaho. Nancy and her partner opened Nourish in 2011, and they just sold it after 5.5 years. So this is a big point of transition in her life. I was attracted to Nancy's yoga classes early on based on her emphasis in her classes on clarity of alignment and attention to foundation. She also challenges in ways that I think few teachers really do in such an effective way. She emphasizes the connection and appreciation of your breath, but most importantly, perhaps to me, is her encouragement and unconditional acceptance in class that allows you to accept the challenge and move to places you never thought possible for yourself. So today, I'm really excited to talk to Nancy about her yoga journey, the way it has shaped or influenced her own body image, as that has been a theme that we talk about a lot on this podcast, and also what she's observed about both of these things as she's gotten older. Welcome.
Thank you, Anne.
So let's start with your background, your yoga story. How did you start? How did you get into it?
Mm-hmm. I was a professional dancer for about a decade, so I come from a modern dance background, but was studying dance since the time I was like 5 years old. And as a dancer, you naturally get exposed to lots of different movement modalities. So my guess is I never really had a traditional yoga class in my dance experience, but a little bit of dappling here and there, until about 1987, when I was 25, and I had my first yoga class with Adila Pakilova, who lives in the Seattle area. It was an Iyengar class. It blew my mind. I thought I was a really strong, like physically strong as a dancer, and I could barely do anything. And it kind of alarmed me a little bit and humbled me greatly. So that was my first official class, and then I kind of let that slide off the plate as I was continuing to be a professional dancer and rehearsing all the time and traveling nationally and internationally. And it wasn't until about 2000 when I was going through some really tough marital stuff in the midst of a divorce, and I had a small child. Mm-hmm. And that's when I remembered what yoga had felt like, and I knew that I needed to do something at that point. Like, I was totally at crisis. Mm-hmm. And felt like I could either go this way or I could go that way. This way being like just a numb out, which is would be something that would be very easy for me to do because I had so much, you know, pain in my heart. So it was like that choice or actually diving into something that could really hold my presence and give me an outlet, right? So that's when I started really seriously pursuing yoga again. And that very first year back, I was the only studio that I was kind of interested in that was very close to my neighborhood in Seattle was a Bikram studio. And so I studied Bikram yoga, which is a set sequence. You do the same poses, the same 26 poses two times each, every time, all the time. That's all you do in a heated space. And that was extremely therapeutic. And actually, there's been some research on these set sequences that for people that are going through trauma, it's something that can really help you find ease because you don't have to worry about what's going to come next. You know what's going to come next, and it allows you to feel safer. So I took that class for an entire year and cried every single class, literally. And it was very healing for me. Like, nobody tried to fix me from crying or, you know, try to take care of me in that way. It was just I had this space to do what I needed to do. And so it was really from that experience that it opened my heart. I was like, oh my God, I'd never had anything quite like that. So it was like a safety network for me in a way, emotional safety network.
Can I jump in here for a moment?
Absolutely.
And then we can continue your path. Early on when you took that first class, what you remarked on was the physicality of it. And you said first it blew me away, and then you really mentioned the physicality. Was that the primary piece that, was speaking to you? Or how long did it take before you recognized some of the other pieces of yoga, and what were those?
It was such a good question. So early on, it was merely physical for me. I loved a physical challenge with my body. I was very adept in my body. So anything that was challenging was an appeal to me. So that stayed that way for a long time. It was only when I was having an emotional crisis where I found that there was something else inside of it for me, where I felt like I could be more connected to God or connected to something outside of me that was holding me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answers
your question. Isn't that interesting, though, that I agree with you that it's so much easier to see it when you're in crisis or when you're struggling?
Right, and also when I was early on as a dancer, and I think I mentioned this maybe in that response in that email that I sent you, was that as a performer, you're being viewed from the outside. So your experience is an internal one, except for that you know that what you're doing is being viewed from an outside source. So it's a very different experience versus the practice of yoga is an internally shaped world. Mm-hmm. And when I was approaching it during that time of crisis and very much in that kind of internal world, I realized that there was something else there for me in that way.
What happened for you after practicing Bikram for that period? What came next for you in your yoga journey?
Well, oddly enough, that studio closed down. So there was another one across the street, which was amazing. That was a Baptiste Power Vinyasa studio, and I stayed there for about 6 to 7 years, and that's where I did my first training. So it was really kind of a convenient switch, and it was a switch out of convenience, and that studio closed. And that was a very, very physical practice. Baptiste Power Vinyasa Yoga is a very vigorous. It's based from the Ashtanga roots, which is like sort of a regulated, almost like a routine, lots of chaturangas, lots of low push-ups, lots of same sequencing, building heat, building fire, and all of that. It's a strong, strong practice. And that felt really good. It wasn't until later on that I had access to something that had a deeper meaning for me again.
And now is Anusara the next chapter for you?
So
now you're an Anusara yoga teacher. And what does that offer that is unique compared to your previous yoga experience? And is that the one that resonates with you the most?
Mm-hmm. I love that question. Let me just say that how I got into it was interesting. So I was in this very physically driven practice, and it had some alignment cueing for sure, but I got injured, and someone suggested that I take this Anusara class because it was really intelligently designed for people with injuries and so on and so forth. And I took it, and I hated it. I couldn't believe it. We did nothing. We did two poses the entire class, and I was used to sweating and getting this really good workout. And I was, but something drew me back because there was something else going on in that class. There were heart-based messages. It was the context of the class was something other than just a physical practice. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was when I moved over to the Palouse area, I took my first training in Anusara up in Coeur d'Alene. I traveled up there once a Saturday for an entire year and learned what that lineage had to offer. And it really, I think the beautiful thing for me is it's steeped in yogic philosophy, the non-dual philosophy, which is basically saying that the sacred is found right in the mundane. Like, it's the divine is right here, right now. We don't have to ascend somewhere else. And so that was really appealing. And also that the classes and the sequencing, like I said, was designed around some really heartfelt context, mm-hmm. which gave the movement, gave you purpose and intention to do the poses that you were doing. Mm-hmm. And it's also, Anusara has this other element, which is it's very community-based. So the first few times I was in an Anusara class, that first class I was saying I didn't like, but there were parts that I thought were amazing. Like, people, everybody in the class shared their names. You had an opportunity to talk to your neighbors in the previous classes that I had been in for years. No one really even talked to each other. So everybody was in kind of their little yoga bubble. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Anusara, it felt more like you were in a group, in a kula, in a community. So yeah. That has really resonated with me over the years.
So I, you know, when I got here to the Palouse, which was 3.5 years ago, I think I got to the Palouse on a Thursday or a Friday, like mm-hmm. moving into my house in Pullman. And Sunday, I went to Christine Pedersen's class because I knew, well, physical activity has always been a foundation in our family. And when, you know, we came on job interviews, it's, where are we going to work out? It's the first question. What gym am I going to join? The rec was expensive, didn't quite mm-hmm. have what we wanted at the university, didn't want to work out with the students. So my husband and I were both, like, exploring, and he ended up at Idaho Athletic Club, because, which is funny, that's in Moscow, mm-hmm. not Pullman, because it had the variety of things he wanted. And so he ended up there, and it's so funny how I can't remember how this shift happened, but something during that move across the country from Illinois, I was ready to try yoga kind of full-on, like that was going to be something I really wanted to try in a very devoted way. And I thought, maybe my thing will be joining a studio. Maybe that will be, mm-hmm. and not a gym. Mm-hmm. Let me try this. And Christine cried in that class, and which she does frequently, right? and not too frequently. Christine, mm-hmm. I love you. I know you'll probably listen to this. But enough to show that she's human and vulnerable, and just enough, right? Which allowed me to be human and vulnerable. And I just walked out of that first class going, oh my gosh, I don't know what that was, but I want to go back, you know. And I think it almost was all the heart theme stuff. I mean, I love all of it, the mm-hmm. physical challenge. I've been very physically engaged my whole life as an athlete and then just as an exerciser. But my exercise was not fulfilling. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was exercise. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll talk about that more with the mm-hmm. body image stuff. And so I got totally drawn in by those heart themes. Mm-hmm. It did what you said, purpose mm-hmm. and intention and supporting my whole being. So do you want to tell us more about that aspect, or if, in fact, has Anusara become, I think that was part of the question I asked, mm-hmm. like, the yoga practice for you? What else do you want to tell us about?
Thank you. One of the things that I'd like to say is that, let's see, I've been studying Anusara since 2008 when I got here. And for a long time I was going that direction. And then what happened was in 2012 Anusara broke up and all of right. my key teachers left. There was a big departure and there was just, it was a really heart-wrenching time. And I was lost, right? I didn't know what I wanted to do, which direction I wanted to go, who was really going to be my mentor teacher. And so I was looking for something else, and there's a lot of really other great things out there. I ended up doing my advanced teacher training with Noam Mazay, who was former Anusara, amazing teacher, incredible experience I had, and so much knowledge I got from that. But I feel like even with all that knowledge base, it helped me do things a lot wiser, more skillfully, but I still felt like there was something that was kind of missing. So I ended up seeking what I had already been doing, which was the Anusara. So for me, as a teacher and as a person, I have just felt like just more fulfilled offering something that has more of a spiritual content to it. Because it brings more meaning to my practice, and I think more meaning to students. And so that's kind of become what I've been interested in as I'm getting older as well. Just mm-hmm. a little bit more context to the movement.
Yeah. And it fits for me personally. The other reason, I throughout that first year, and you know I was at Nourish a lot my first year, much more so than I am now. That first year, I think I had less in my life as I was transitioning. It's a nice sweeping away of a lot of extra stuff. And then as you get entrenched in a new community, you get busy again. And that first year, I was going about four times a week. And over the 15, 20 minutes over to Moscow to do yoga. And every class was an epiphany. But as a researcher in sport and exercise psychology, it resonated with me just perfectly because there have been a couple key interests that I've had. One is helping people be motivated to move their bodies in ways that feel good across their lifespan, not just in short, quick bursts, but ways that are adaptive and enjoyable and fulfilling across their lifespan. And the other is finding ways to help people move that provide positive outcomes of the movement. So, for example, reducing stress or improving body image, improving physical activity, motivation. And some of the things I've been more interested of late are becoming a more self-compassionate person or becoming a more mindful person. And so the way that Anyasara wraps in those heart themes so beautifully, so inextricably intertwined, because we talked about this in our training. So Nancy co-taught my teacher, my 200-hour teacher training, and that it's not a yoga teacher just sitting at the front and say, today's theme is mindfulness, and then never talking about it again. It's woven into the movement, and that appealed to me so much because of my interest in using physical activity as a vehicle for personal growth as well. I could not think of a more perfect way to do it. Because it was just, we try to do that, we do that in competitive sport context and in exercise context. We teach values and different things that people can take away from a physical activity experience and apply to their lives. But I don't, in my humble opinion, I don't think any form of physical activity I've been exposed to does so in such a seamless way. And so I thought, this is it. I have to study this, you know, and so now the audience knows a little bit about what I study, and it is the effects of yoga on many different outcomes. So that just intrigued me, and I remember another aha moment was a Ryan Law class. She was just so nurturing and just saying all of the right things, and this is just a little bit more for the audience, is that she perfectly encapsulated what we call a mastery climate, which is a climate in the sport and exercise psychology literature that perfectly nurtures adaptive positive motivation and feelings of competence and just all sorts of good feelings. I was tearing up because the things she was saying were so perfect. And so that alignment between the practice of yoga that I've experienced at Nourish and what the research says is adaptive and nurturing for our body image and motivation and many other things is what's happening in those classes. Wow. So I just, over and over again, I would tear up or I would just be in awe that that's how that worked. And so that's, I can't leave. I've been hooked in. I've been completely hooked in. So, so that inspired me to learn more and do my first, I would say my first 200 hours of teacher training. Why do you teach yoga, Nancy?
That's a bigger question than I might be able to answer. How much time do we have? You know, and that answer changes, right, as I get older. And as I'm in it longer, I think the reason why I teach is primarily it's a healing experience for myself. One of the things that I've really been focused in on the last year is learning to really love myself and trust myself. And the more I teach, the more it enhances that, and it's all kind of wrapped in what my own practices and what I'm teaching are, they're connected, they're integrated. But it really comes from, I have to say, from a feeling of this is a healing modality for me on many, many levels. One level is that I've always had mild anxiety my whole life, or since I was a young girl. I lost my dad when I was 9, and so there was always this low-grade anxiety going on for me, and stress and worry is just a presence in, you know, it's present in my life. And so I've found that my own practice in yoga and teaching yoga allows me to address my own needs in that area, reducing anxiety, and also giving real key and tangible things for people to have in their life. So I talk mm-hmm. about it a lot. I'm really open about and transparent about, like, I, as a teacher, being authentic is really important to me. Mm-hmm. So I don't try and pretend that I'm something other than I'm not, and that I have real life experiences that are difficult, and how this practice has helped me cope in my life. And my wish is that I can offer that back to other people. So that's also a big part of it, giving back what I had given to me to hold me mm-hmm. in really difficult times.
I think that is a huge part of what makes you such a powerful teacher, the authenticity mm-hmm. and ability and willingness to show parts of you that hurt or mm-hmm. Or that have struggled. And that's why I connected with Christine. That's why mm-hmm. I connected with Ryan Law. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's willing to show that, I think, can mm-hmm. be a really amazing yoga teacher.
Mm, thank
that's
you.
Finding that authenticity. So one of the reasons that I first talked to you about coming in here to have this conversation is that we've talked a bit on this podcast about the role of yoga in perhaps changing the way that we view our body or relate to our body. How has that happened for you? Has it happened for you in the way that you either view or relate to your body?
I love my body more than I ever have, which is really kind of cool. I'm 54.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was an amazing and beautiful, I have to say, dancer. And yet my sense of body image was a little bit skewed at that time. Just because of the expectations of what a dancer looks like, you know, lanky, long, super flexy, gorgeous, young, all of that. I mean, there's all of these sort of, expectations about how you will look, what you'll be doing. In the practice of yoga, in my studies of yoga, it's more about how I feel on the inside. So as I heal my inside and love myself more on the inside, I feel like my body image resonates with that, and my mm-hmm. The way I look at myself has definitely changed. I see myself more beautiful even as I'm aging and changing. So I don't know if that answers your question, but...
So do you think that does the focus on the inside actually also cause you to be more appreciative of the outside? Is that what I hear you saying?
That's what you hear me saying. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I my experience, it's interesting because when we have an N of one, which is our own life experience, mm-hmm. we just have this one life experience. It's hard. It's been hard for me to disentangle how much my improvement in body image is due to aging. Which there can come some general acceptance with mm-hmm. aging and general a trend towards letting go of unrealistic societal ideals because you feel like maybe they are less relevant to you. But I think it really, for me, directly coincided with starting yoga and Nourish. Mm-hmm. I think that is the bigger mm-hmm. factor for me, that it's not just because I'm 40 now and those things aren't as important, but it's almost a complete acceptance of my body, and it's almost completely internal. There's always going to be this external piece of it, I think, for most people. Maybe mm-hmm. there are some people that have zero external view on their body or perspective on their body, but the teachings in classes, the repeatedly drawing my attention to the way that my body felt mm-hmm. and teaching me to be wise enough to find ways to adjust my body to feel certain ways, mm-hmm. I think that happening over and over and over again in classes is what shifted my view. And the external for me has become far less relevant. Just
exactly.
Far less relevant.
Yeah, and you really begin to trust yourself more when you start to feel what is actually working in your body. Mm-hmm. I wanted to say something about the difference between dance and yoga for me was, as a dancer, you were always working with mirrors, unless you were in a performance space getting ready for a show, which, always looking at your body from the outside.
Right.
Okay, so in the practice of yoga, there are some lineages that have mirrors, like a Bikram practice, a traditional Bikram practice. You would be using mirrors as a way to line up your body. But most hatha-based yoga, you're not using mirrors to check your body, so you're relying on something deeper on the inside and trusting that. And I somehow I feel like that helps you augment your body image versus just what you're saying, just as you're looking from the outside in.
That, because prior to starting at Nourish, my exercise was primarily group fitness.
Uh-huh.
Always mirrors.
Yes.
Always mirrors, never choices about what to do in your body, right? It's just follow the instructor, and always the instructor doing it with you. And so that was another aha where I went, whoa, Christine's doing a lot of just walking around. Nancy's just walking around. Mm-hmm. They're not modeling everything. They're modeling when appropriate. I thought that, too, was fabulous because I was just really appreciating. I was kind of observing from up here my whole experience of getting into yoga, and I was thinking, whoa, this is so cool because the less they model and the lack of mirrors is only facilitating my focus on my sensations.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
I thought it was amazing.
Oh God, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, the modeling. And you taught us that this summer. Like, can you teach a class? Can you teach an entire class verbally?
Hard to do.
It is. It is. And as a new
worthy,
teacher, I'm struggling
for sure.
with that. Yeah. So you also mentioned when we were talking about this, that you really wanted to talk about what's happened as you've gotten older.
Mm.
And that's a perspective we don't always hear. We don't focus on that enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what do you want to tell us about how you're viewing your body or relating to your body as you've started to get older?
Oh, God. This is just so funny. I think the one of the most shocking things to me is when someone says, hey, this happened to me at the co-op actually here in Moscow. I admonished the person. I said, don't ask somebody if they're a senior. If they are, they're just going to tell you. She's like, do you want the senior discount? I'm like, dude, do not ask me that.
I still can't get over being called ma'am.
Right?
Like,
So I have a hard time with that because I internally still feel like I'm in my 20s. That may sound odd, but I'm more fit now, more body integrated than I have ever been.
Yeah.
So it's this weird difference between how I look on the outside and my actual number age versus how I feel. But let me circle back to your question. Just remind me again what the question was.
But that part was, I'm so glad that you said that. That part was great. How you're relating to your body differently as you get older, or how your view of your body has changed as you've gotten older?
Yeah. Oh, okay, how I relate to my body as I'm getting older. I make a point of looking at my image in the mirror in the morning and seeing something that I love. I'm very cautious what I do with my body. I won't do something if I feel unsafe because I'm in it for the longevity. I want to be doing yoga until I'm in my 90s if I'm on the planet. I have a daily practice that is like a ritual for me, daily meditation practice, daily asana practice. That is what allows me to feel good in my body so that I can look in the mirror and feel good about myself.
Mm-hmm.
My body's changing a lot, especially in this last year has just been a profound number of changes for me externally and also in my own body.
Mm-hmm.
Just noticing, this sort of, and we live in a really dry climate, but like how everything is kind of drying up. Like you can kind of think about, like, I'm not a prune, but when I think about what a prune is, like wrinkly and dry, and that's kind of how we get as we get older. We have less liquid, we just get less malleable.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling like, oh my God, that's kind of happening. That's sort of an alarming sensation. to see that on the outside, to see that with more wrinkles, and especially when you lose weight, that becomes more apparent, which it has for me. But seeing those kinds of visible changes is hard. And I think what's challenging about being in this age group that I'm in at 54 is that, you know, I'm not in the childbearing years anymore, and I'm not a senior citizen. I don't call myself. I'm not mm-hmm. in that area. So I'm in this kind of fuzzy landscape where people don't really, like women at my age, they kind of disappear from the media. We don't see a lot of women in movies. Well, we do some in the movies, but I don't know, like in the yoga industry, for example, it's not an age group that you see highlighted at all. Mm-hmm. It's like Yoga Journal, Yoga International, I think that's the name of that journal, where you see images of, you know, women in their 20s and 30s, and you don't really see anybody. There's one ad I saw in Yoga Journal recently, and maybe it's been there for a while, at Kripalu Yoga in New York, where it's showing a woman, she might be in her 60s, she's got mm-hmm. totally gray hair. Beautiful, right? But we don't get to see that very much. So I feel like a little lost. Like, mm-hmm. who am I looking, who is there to, I don't know, aspire to?
Mm-hmm. You bring up some really good points about, because I've experienced this too, being, you know, just a bit younger than you are, is I remember when I first started as a faculty member, I really thought that if I went to the student union, I would just blend in, mm-hmm. right? I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought that. And it took a long time for that to change. And then at a certain point, I thought, I really don't, do I? I don't really just blend in here anymore. I'm not going to be mistaken for a student.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel different on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. And I would say that I'm noticing what you're noticing is that it takes longer to warm up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tighter.
Mm-hmm.
There are those changes. But energetically, if I'm taking care of myself,
mm-hmm.
Vitality-wise, mm-hmm. mentally, mm-hmm. I don't feel different. And it is an odd thing where the world starts to treat you differently.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think it's really cool to get this out there so that mm-hmm. people know mm-hmm. of all ages that, no, there's a whole lot. Don't mm-hmm. let's try not to have these biases and make these assumptions because mm-hmm. there's a lot more on the inside than you know.
There is
a
teacher I haven't studied with, but Desiree Rambeau used to be an Anasara. She's not anymore, I'm pretty sure. But she is someone who's doing something very interesting. She has something she does called the Wisdom Warriors, which I think is working with women and maybe men 50 over.
Hmm.
I've got to find out about her because that's really inspiring for me to kind of start to work with a certain segment of the population.
Yeah.
Because women at this age have a lot of different kinds of different needs than women have in the childbearing years, for sure. Not just physically, but mentally. You know, going through empty nest stuff, transitions in their marriage, transitions in their careers. I mean, there's just a lot going on.
Yeah.
Could be very helpful.
And not only being with that group, but I think what I've also been in, had the opportunity to engage with women across generations,
mm-hmm.
that intergenerational interaction, I think, can be so cool. Ivy Ricci did like a four-part Her Body Image,
mm-hmm.
a Body Satya series last spring, and I signed up and did it. What was so cool about the group was we had like a 21-year-old.
Nice.
We had me in the middle, and then we had Betsy and some of her friends, you know, who were maybe mm-hmm. a bit the next generation. And what we learned from each other and just hearing those different perspectives and the community of women across generations was really cool.
That's awesome.
Because body image is always, it's always a thing.
Yeah.
It might mean different things at different ages. And what does that look like?
Nice. And there's so much learning that we can get from each other. And we don't have that opportunity to be in a mix of ages like that very often.
Yeah, really to
cool.
learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like, without a doubt, you know, can you even imagine what your relationship would be like to your body as you're aging if you weren't doing yoga?
Yeah, I can't imagine. I can't imagine at all because I've always been, you know, my whole life in movement, but especially yoga the last 17 mm-hmm. years or so. I can't imagine.
Because if you were still just in dancing world, mm-hmm. or maybe you segued mm-hmm. into being a runner
mm-hmm.
or group exercise,
mm-hmm.
that emphasis would still be on the external.
Exactly.
And then you're going through all these external changes and internal changes,
mm-hmm.
and there's nothing solid mm-hmm. to kind of come back to.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm glad we're having this conversation because it kind of gives me fuel for maybe my next, not my next direction, but kind of honing in on what I could be doing in this next few years is focusing on a particular group of women.
Yeah.
Age group.
Yeah. We're almost to the end here in terms of what I wanted to really talk about today. Mm-hmm. And then you're certainly welcome to add anything that you feel like is on your heart that you just want to put out into the world. This is your chance. Mm-hmm. I had this last question that I wanted to pose in terms of the wisdom that you might mm-hmm. impart to younger girls and younger women.
Mm-hmm. Boy, what I'd like to say first off is I wish I had something like that when I was a young girl going through a really difficult time, especially as a preteen and teenager. I actually developed very, very early. I was like 11 years old, 12 years old in fifth grade, and I had, you know, all the other girls. I mean, I just kind of really stood out. I didn't know what to do. It's almost like I woke up one day and I was in a woman's body. And no one really talked about stuff. It was just challenging. I guess one of the things that I would say is for younger women is to really be, to find the women that you trust and be open with your feelings, be open with your expression of what's troubling you, what's confusing to you. Having a sounding board is just incredibly important. It may not be your mother. Sometimes that's really challenging. It could be a sister. It could be an aunt. It could be someone who's a teacher or a friend. I think having some touchstone person or people that you feel safe with and can express your concerns about your body, how things are changing, that's one thing that I didn't have. I think that would be incredibly instrumental to any young woman. I also would suggest that young women, you know, certainly whatever their interest is, if it's sports, you know, engaging in sports or engaging in some kind of activity that gets you inside your heart and keeping your focus on what's happening inside your heart versus what's happening on the outside of you, what's being shown on the outside in media, film, social media, I mean, any of that, because it can be really distracting and it can really get you unplugged from mm-hmm. what's really important and what's individually, you know, what's the word, poignant for you.
Yeah. So. Are there any last things you want to say today?
I would love to be a mentor for a young woman or a group of young women. That would be really mm-hmm. an incredible experience for me. I feel like I could give back a lot. And what else? I think learning how to, and we said it earlier, learning how to love yourself is a lifelong practice. It's not something that you just, that you either have or you don't have. I think everybody, I think for people that say that that's not an issue, I'd say that that's not true. I'd say for everyone there's mm-hmm. an issue of self-acceptance and love. And like, if we can each learn to do that as a practice, that will eliminate so much sort of, and you know, aggravation about how we are viewed, how we view ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I think I agree with you. If somebody says mm-hmm. that's not an issue, it's because mm-hmm. you've covered it up with so many layers mm-hmm. of, is it the malas?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, you know, so many things that maybe you're not even aware mm-hmm. that's at the root of it. Mm-hmm. I think, well, you certainly can. You've been a mentor to me, mm-hmm. and I think I feel the same way. Like, what are these outlets or places where you can effectively mentor younger women mm-hmm. through this? But I know that Nourish had played around a little bit with women's circles, mm-hmm. and I think that's a fabulous idea, and that's a great way to get people together at different stages. Although, you know, interestingly, you're saying you have trouble finding the group mm-hmm. that you look like. I actually similarly find it very hard, I don't know if this is just me, to connect with women my age, because I feel like women who are in their careers and raising children mm-hmm. are too busy.
Exactly.
And I have really made a commitment, and I have a strong support system at home where my husband does, you know, a lot of the parenting, where I can go and do my things, but sometimes finding my peers and friends to do it with me is hard.
Right. It's isolating.
Yeah. And then so I'm not, and so at every juncture of life it's important. Mm-hmm. But at that particular juncture of life where we're going through all these things, I find mm-hmm. it's very hard to get us together to talk mm-hmm. about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other than on the sideline at kids' practice, and you get the little chit-chat about, well, then it's about raising the kids, right?
Exactly.
And it's not about you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
We could keep talking and talking. This has been wonderful. You've offered a lot. You've offered a lot today. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you for the opportunity, Anne.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Moving Mindfully. I want to thank the College of Education at Washington State University for supporting this podcast. And I want to send a very special thank you to Maddie Roberts, my student who has been helping produce all of these initial episodes of the podcast. I could not have done this without her. Thanks to all of you for listening. Until we meet again.